you know, it's really relentless. It's immensely rewarding and really challenging, but you know, I guess the decision, it wasn't like a fast decision. It's something that's been on my mind for a while, and kind of feeling like, you know, time for a new challenge, something new. That's where I sort of ended up.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Last week, Danny Vallant, host of our sibling podcast, Dirty Linen, explored whether the hospitality industry is broken. COVID may have shaken the foundations, but has the fallout made it harder than ever to be a single operator? What are the challenges and opportunities moving forward? Dave Young is a chef and owner of Temperata in Canberra. Dave, how are you?
Good, thanks, Huck. How you doing?
I'm good. It's good to get you on the show. Got one of the best restaurants in Canberra, but you're calling it a day for Temperata.
That's correct. 10 years. 10 years is quite the effort, and I think it's just feels like time for us.
Well, tell us a little bit about the decision, and was it a difficult one for you?
Yeah, I mean, really bittersweet. You know, it's something that's sort of been on my mind for a while. You know, keep going or not keep going. You really sort of feel like you know, you've got a lot more in you and you could keep going, but I guess kind of weighing up everything, you know, there's so much to it, not only from the business sense, but from like, you know, your family and your home life. And I guess like as a small restaurant, like you just pour so much of yourself into it. As a small business owner, I'm pretty sure everyone would know this, like you just end up wearing every single hat, you know, I'm approving payroll. We're doing marketing. I'm in the kitchen. We're talking about dishes. We're doing catering. I'm off doing that. It's just, you know, it's really relentless. It's immensely rewarding and really challenging. But, you know, I guess the decision, it wasn't like a fast decision. It's something that's been on my mind for a while. And kind of feeling like, you know, time for a new challenge, something new. That's where I sort of ended up.
What are things like in Canberra at the moment? We've sort of explored the evolution of the culinary landscape and how exciting, and you've been a part of that. But what's it like as a business at the moment?
Look, I mean, so I'm from Sydney and I lived there, you know, until I was like 32 and worked in a lot of great places, then moved to Canberra. I mean, Canberra is just it's a very different climate than Sydney. We always felt like a lot of the things that were givens in like Sydney or Melbourne or like other big cities were just not the case in Canberra. It was quite a culture shock when I came here. At the moment, look, I mean, I think like everywhere, times are tough. You know, it's cost of living is really impacting like everything, but especially restaurants. I mean, that discretionary spending seems to have really fallen off. So everybody's doing it tough. It's just you know, you feel like you're just constantly hustling to, I guess, well, a lot of reinvention and a lot of like how, you know, where can we find an angle in the market?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Temperata later on and the amazing things that you did there. But take us back to when you were young. You mentioned Sydney, but whereabouts did you grow up and what sort of role did food play for you?
Yeah, so I grew up like northwest out in the sticks in Cherrybrook, which is sort of up on the way out to Dural. Like my parents moved out there like from Melbourne when I was three. And we've got photos of like when they moved into the house and the back beyond our house, it's just like paddocks and cows. It's like hilarious. Like it probably felt like you're moving to like the edge of the universe. And now like that part, it's just part of like metropolitan Sydney. It just keeps going and going and going. So really, I had a really great like upbringing. Like food, however, was not a big part of my upbringing. I'm sure my mum will forgive me, but you know, she was not a great cook. I had a really just the most vanilla kind of upbringing. You know, it was meat and three veg. You know, but it was all prepared with love. You know. And my sister, when I was, I don't even know what I was, like when my sister was a teenager and you know, the way sort of fads come along, it's like, oh, eggs are evil. They're giving you high cholesterol, et cetera. So everyone stopped eating eggs and my sister caught on to the fact that salt was like the killer. So she effectively banned salt in my household. Like, so basically my whole teenage upbringing, I never had salt on anything besides if it was a packet of chips. So it was really kind of weird. Maybe my introduction to cooking was just like out of necessity or desire to like for flavor. I don't really know. I'm really sorry. I apologize to my mom and my sister. But yeah, no, it was a real kind of like, yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, I often hear like the stories of, you know, people that say, oh, you know, I was a child and my grandmother was cooking at, you know, the kitchen and I'd watch her and all this. I have the complete opposite experience, like absolute opposite. So I came to it from a different angle. I think I was just looking for something. I was in search of flavor, I guess. Yeah.
tell us about those first steps into the hospitality sector. How old were you and where did it happen?
Yeah, so I was 15, and I was 15. Everyone, all of your friends are working at McDonald's, right? And I was like, I just felt like I could do better than working at Macca's. So I actually got a job at just completely by chance, I don't know how, at a country club. It was the Dural Country Club. And like, I look back at it now, it's like the Wild West of cooking, you know, like somehow I got into the kitchen and somehow I was working ladder section. I had no idea what I was doing. Very sort of unregulated, like, you know, I was just kind of let loose, which was kind of fun. But it was great. Like, you know, I guess like as a 15-year-old, like, you know, I was working with like chefs, you know, actual chefs and grown-ups and being thrown into like a really strange, like really unfamiliar hospitality environment. And it was like great. I really loved it. You know, I was working two nights a week on my weekends and just, yeah, really enjoying it. That's how it kind of got me in. It's funny because I don't really remember why exactly I wanted to get into cooking. I just knew that I wanted to. I just had my heart set on it, that this is something that I really want to do. And that's how it started.
Tell us about your apprenticeship. Where did you do that and what was it like?
Yeah, so that was at Rockpool and that was incredible. So I finished year 12 and, you know, it was kind of weird because like I went all the way through. I basically did year 11 and 12 because I got to hang out with my mates for like 5 days a week. Like I knew I wanted to cook and I knew I could leave at year 10 and, you know, start an apprenticeship. But I ended, yeah. So I went through year 11 and 12, loved it, applied. Yeah, I got a TER, which is what it was called at the time. I got a pretty decent score and looked at it and thought, oh, maybe I probably could have gone to uni and done something different. But the thing was like, I thought, what would I have done? There would have been nothing I think they would have enjoyed. So I'll tell you a story. I don't know if you want to include this, but I'll tell you a story. Like once this is the weirdest thing, probably the weirdest thing that's ever happened in my life. So, you know, we're out in a school, out in Cherrybrook, Sydney's like northwest, like miles away from the city. And we had like, you know, doing hospitality classes and we had a cooking demo and Matt Moran came to do the cooking demo at my high school. And like, I know, I worked for a tiny, tiny bit for Matt Moran before I started my apprenticeship. I never brought it up with him. I was too shy. But I, like, often wonder what he was doing at my school to do cooking demo. It was amazing. But he really takes credit for, or should take credit for, like, setting me on a path because, you know, after the demo, I went up and talked to him. Because I'd been looking around. I'm like, okay, you know, maybe 5-star hotels, the way to go because of the prestige, etc. And he's just looked at me and said, like, kind of like, you're crazy. He's just said, like, go get the good food guide, look at restaurants you want to work at, and then just go knock on the door. And that's like, seriously, that's what started my whole career, basically, like that advice. I was like, you know, Matt Moran, if you're out there, thanks very much. You are coming to Canberra soon, so I might see you here sometime. Yeah, so that's what started it off. And then, like, you know, Rockpool were hiring. So yeah, I thought, oh, why not? I'll go and try out. And I managed to get an apprenticeship there, and that's where it all began. And like, I don't think I could have gone to a better place to start my career.
The legendary Rockpool in the Rocks. Yeah, so many people had so many amazing experiences there. Take us into that kitchen. It was sort of a rabbit warren of kitchens. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was challenging. Like, it was very, very challenging. I mean, we started, there was myself and three other first year apprentices started effectively on the same week. And we were like thrown into it, like unbelievable. Like, I look back at it now and I'm like, how do we survive? Like, they really just kind of like straight into the deep end. And it was tough, but it wasn't like, you know, your classic kind of British kitchen kind of tough, like abuse, that kind of thing. It was just like, it was difficult. And we all had to like really work hard to catch up. Just like, you know, you just think about the quality of the produce we got and how, you know, the focus was just on flavor and freshness, and how that really kind of like sort of carried on through my career. Like, you know, it was never about like, you know, excessive garnish or, you know, all this sort of fluff on the plate. It was like everything just had to taste really good. Everything had to be full of life. Yeah, and I worked for like really amazing chefs. Like Khan was the head chef at the time. And like, I was there for a long time. But like through my apprenticeship, like it was Khan and Andy Evans, who's at Spice Temple now. Like these guys were like gods to us. Like the things they could do, we were just like in awe of. And it really was inspiring, yeah.
We've had Neil Perry on the show a few times now. Do you have any stories of what it was like working for him and what he's like in the restaurant when you work it?
Yeah, I mean, Neil's just, I mean, the most like passionate person when it comes to hospitality I've ever met. You know, and with Neil, it was, yeah, he wasn't in the kitchen all the time, you know, when I was there. By the time I got there, he'd kind of like progressed to the next level. A whole bunch of other things going on, like Wokpul Darling Harbour was happening, and there was all these other ventures. But his like, just his imprint was on like everything, and you could tell. And Neil's just like, I have so much respect for Neil. Like, Neil's the kind of person that like, just through like force of will, like things would happen. And that's like, it's amazing. Like, you know, he just wants something to happen and it will happen just because he's just has so much belief, and just relentless kind of person, just like tireless worker. I mean, on and off for years, I was at Rockpool back and forth and in different roles. And it's just, you know, so much admiration for the man and especially what he's doing now. I mean, my God, like he's opened a restaurant, like no offense, Neil, but like, that's a good age to like to open a new like bunch of new restaurants. Like unbelievable. That kind of energy, it's amazing. Like incredible. I'm jealous.
Yeah, there are a few people like Neil Perry on the planet. You spent a bit of time in London in your early years. So what was it like? Was it a shock to you, the kitchens there?
Yeah, I mean, that was so I ended up at Mirabelle, which was Marco Pio White's, his last remaining starred restaurant. So it was a one star in London. It was good. It was very different. I loved the fact that they would call service in French and I had no idea what they were saying. So I just used to like nod along and like pretend I knew what was going on. I was too like shy or too embarrassed to say, I have no idea what these guys are saying. Very different, but I mean the style, I mean, I'd been at Rockpool for so long. Like I did my whole apprenticeship at Rockpool, 4 years. And then just to see something totally different, it was pretty stark, but also, you know, it really kind of sort of put a spotlight on, you know, how good the training was at Rockpool, like how you learned how to cook a piece of fish properly every time and you learn how to cook a piece of meat, you know. I love my time at Mirabelle and I learned quite a bit. Like, you never stop learning in this game. But, you know, I used to look at some things and just think, like, what's the point of doing that? Like, what's the point of, like, turning parsnips into, like, little crescent shapes and then just overcooking them? Like, it didn't seem to – none of it really made sense to me. Or, like, we'd spend time quenelling fromage blanc, you know, ahead of time and then putting them on a plate so that they were perfect. But then, like, the rest of the dish probably wasn't seasoned properly. It's just like, I feel like the focus was on the wrong things here and there. But I mean, London is such a great, it's such a great city. I haven't been back since. I'd love to go back and see what it's like. I'd love to go back, not as a, you know, not as a chef working, you know, 80 hours a week. It'd be great to have a bit of time to have free time. And the weird thing was, like, Marco, this was again, like, Marco had kind of, he'd also, like, moved on. You know, I never saw him at the restaurant once. He was just, like, the name. You know, he was kind of like the legend. You know, everyone would be like, oh, Marco, he'd walk back in this kitchen right now and he'd be calling service. Like you wouldn't skip a beat and this and that. So it was almost like he was just, like, the urban myth of the kitchen. But they had these, like, really, a lot of the things, the dishes they brought from the Oak Room, a 3-star restaurant, had ended up at Mirabelle, and some of the chefs had come over too. And so, like, some of the things they did were just, like, beautiful. Like, some of them were just, like gorgeous and, like, really great technique. And just the things that you never really learn at Rockpool, like, you know, the classic sort of sauces were never really Neil's thing. He's very, like, his food was very, very light. It was not about, like, you know, reductions and you know, mounting sauces, etc. So, yeah, I guess it was all about learning a totally different style of cooking, but also, like, learning that what I had learned at Rockpool was, like, pretty priceless. Yeah.
You reconnected with Neil Perry when you came back to Sydney for a couple of years and worked with the likes of Mike McInerney and Phil Wood. What were they like to work with?
Yeah, I mean, it was completely by chance that I ended up back at Rockwell. It was not my plan. And Neil just kind of cornered me, and he's got a really good way of, like, of just looking at you and, like, what are you doing? You should come and work for me. And I was like, all right, okay, great. Yeah, you know, I mean, Mike and Phil are like, I mean, working with Mike was, like, amazing. Mike is just, again, like, so, so passionate about what he does. I think under Mike, really kind of learnt a lot about running sort of a kitchen, but, like, as if you're running a business. Like, Mike was, like, so, like, systematic and so precise, Like, you know, he would be asking you why you'd want, like, 4 eggplants on your order. Like, we're not talking about ordering a kilo. He'd be like, why do you need 4? And, like, just, like, saying, well, like, I guess I could get away with 2. And he'd be like, okay, we'll do 2 then, you know. It was, like, with Mike, there was always this, like, he's always turning the screws on you, which was, like, again, in hindsight, I look back at it, I'm like, oh, that was great, you know. I really enjoyed it. And I think he enjoyed it too. He loved putting the pressure on us young guys. But, you know, he's just, you know, Mike was just such a great team builder as well. Like, I'd never seen that before. Mike was... would bring everyone in. Everyone would be on the same page. There was never any sort of, you know, confusion about what we were doing or what direction we were heading. Really, really amazing. And, like, Phil is, like, you know, in his own way, like, amazing. Like, Phil and I only worked together for, it was less than a year when Phil took over from Mike. And Phil's just, like, a force of creation, you know. He was just creating, like, that was incredible to see. Like, you know, whereas I think Mike was a bit more, like, measured, and Phil was just had that creativity, and things would just change so rapidly. You know, and Phil just brought in all this, like, technique that was totally different to anything we'd been doing before through his time at, like, French Laundry, etc. So it's like, yeah, it was really amazing. Yeah.
Restaurateur Alex Kearns created some of the best suburban restaurants in Sydney of their time, Clay Point Diner and Neutral Bay Bar and Dining, and you were a part of that. How did that gig come about, and what was Alex like to work with?
Yeah, so I was kind of, like, in between jobs, and I applied for a job somewhere, I can't remember where, and I got beaten out just because I wasn't in town, and the guy said, look, well, these guys are opening a new restaurant, which was Neutral Bay Bar and Dining. Do you want to, like, check them out? And I was like, okay, sure. And that's how that ended up. I mean, so it was with Alex and RJ Lyons, who was One Penny Red. Look, I mean, that was, like, that was a very fun experience, I've got to say, because that was kind of, this is kind of like cooking I'd never really experienced before. It was very, it was just so free flowing. I guess it was, you know, when you work at like somewhere like Rockpool, like we had dishes, right? You know, we would, you know, Khan and Neil would make the dish and then you just look at it and be like, okay, this is the dish and that's it. And then you're like, okay, cool, no problems. But with like Alex and RJ, it just was like, the creativity was like totally different. And I really, it's kind of weird to say, but I really feel like, I really learned to cook like with those guys, like understanding that like, you know, recipes aren't fixed, you know, it just because something's used over on that dish, like doesn't mean it can't be used, you know, can't be modified slightly, and used for something else. And Nutrabay Bar and Dining was great. Like setting up a new restaurant's always kind of fun. It's always like interesting and the challenges. I mean, a new restaurant is like, it's like heart attack inducing, I think, for those who are actually in charge of it. But for everyone else, it's kind of like, you know, hey, this is great. We get to like, you know, try out new things. And yeah, I really like, again, so much respect for those guys. It was a great experience. Alex is just such a good guy as well. It was just such a lad. You know, he'd be prepping in the kitchen and he's like, you know, he just finished playing tennis and he's in his shorts and he's just prepping in the kitchen. I was like, that's cool. I've never seen that before. That's great. These bright pink shorts. Yeah, that kind of stuff was like awesome. It was kind of like almost a nice like release as well, like in a different environment with different people, seeing a totally different side of hospitality and how it can come together. It was fantastic. Yeah.
You mentioned the fun of opening up a new restaurant. You were involved in Cafe Nice with Barry McDonald. Tell us about that period of time. What was it like?
Yeah, so again, Barry just kind of came out of nowhere. Originally I only worked at Fratelli at Bridge Street, and that was after I left Rockpool. That was after the last little stint I did at Rockpool. And so, you know, Neil and Barry, good friends. So Neil hooked me up, which was, thank you again, Jeff. And I ended up down at Bridge Street, and they just opened Fratelli at Bridge Street, I think 4 months before I got there. And they were a lot busier than I think they were expecting it to be. And that place was just a machine. Like it absolutely churned, you know, every day. It didn't matter. Like there were no bookings, but you were just going to be full every day. And that's probably the first restaurant I've worked at where it was like constantly busy. There was no let up. Like it did not stop. And I kind of walked in, it was like the baptism of fire. I just kind of walked in and they're like, all right, now I need you to run this place. And I was like, okay, don't know any of the people, don't know any of the recipes. Well, let's go for it. Really challenging. It took, I don't know, maybe like 6 months to really kind of like, you know, work out all the kinks. And and then it was just like, then it just purred like a kitten. It was just, you know, every day it was just, you know, it was comfortable. It was really nice. And maybe too comfortable. Like I think I was kind of itching for something else. And then Barry wanted to open up Cafe Nice and it sounded really exciting. So yeah, I said, I agreed to that. Cafe Nice, definitely one of my fondest memories of anywhere I've worked. Really the first time, really the only time, I guess, where I've, you know, where I was able to like, you know, put in, you know, the kitchen that I wanted and hire the team, you know, and really kind of, and really kind of get, you know, deep into like, you know, that sort of Provençal style food. And yeah, really, really loved it. Like Barry's like a, you know, Barry's a driver of people. Like he just won't let you sit back and rest on your laurels. Barry pushes. And I think I really liked that too. Like I really liked that, you know, someone who was like, you know, you also like everywhere you work, you get to see different styles. And Barry's style was like, you know, constantly just working at every single thing. And Barry sort of fits into the same mold as Neil, like just tireless. Just these guys just live and breathe what they do, and they don't stop. So, yeah, it was great. Like Cafe Nice was a fun experience, very fun.
Was there a dish or two from that period of time that sort of exemplifies your cooking then that you could share with us?
Ooh, that's a really good question, Huck. everything was like really kind of like everything there we tried to do with like that sort of lightness of touch that you'd find sort of like south of France, like, you know, it was pissoladière, you know, really great anchovies, caramelized onions, and like this beautiful sour cream pastry that we used to make as like the snack. Man, you're making me think really hard about what I actually served on the menu back then. I mean, and it was like, yeah, we did like, yeah, we were doing like whole John Dory on the grill with like Montpellier butter, like just a really beautiful light, like herby butter. Sauce vierge was like on a few bits and pieces, like poached prawns, like just like really tried to make. And Barry, like, you know, the restaurant looked like great, and in the way I think Barry does restaurants, he just like gets the right people to design things, and it, you know, all sort of the blue and white striped awnings outside, it really kind of felt like you were like, you know, somewhere in Provence, like down at the beach. But I gotta say, having been to Provence, the food's not that great. So cut that out, don't I can't rubbish Provence on that. We did like, yeah, but the food was like very like, we tried to keep it, you know, as classical as possible, and just let flavors really kind of sing, you know, like let food speak for itself. I think that's what like Provençal food is all about. Yeah, there's really not too many bells and whistles. It's just like, yeah, you know, what's in season, what's beautiful, and just trying to like, make the most of it.
With all these extraordinary experiences in some of the most influential restaurants in Sydney, how did you end up in Canberra?
Yeah. So I think I shocked a few people when I did that. A real zag there. So my wife's parents, they live in Canberra, and we would visit, you know, occasionally, and, you know, we just loved the pace, I guess, like, you know, living in Sydney. I mean, I was commuting, you know, sometimes like hour and a half, 2 hours a day, to and from work, and, you know, working long shifts and finishing at midnight and not getting home till like 1 a.m. and sort of turning around and doing it again. Plus we just had our first child, and, you know, we're just kind of looking at each other thinking like, how much more can we keep going, like, you know, on the treadmill here? And is there something else? Is there something better? And, you know, every time we visit Canberra, it just felt so like peaceful and relaxed. So I guess it was kind of like the decision of, you know, a few other things sort of happened, and we were like, well, do we stay or do we go? And it's like, well, if we're going to go, like, now is the time. And yeah, that's how it kind of ended up in Canberra. I mean, it was also good timing because Ben was looking for someone at Aubergine. He was looking for a head chef over at Aubergine. And it just kind of like the planets kind of aligned with that one. And yeah, took the plunge and moved. Yeah. And that was like, oh my God, like almost 10 years ago now. And it's like gone real fast. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, Ben Willis ended up closing Aubergine not all that long ago, actually. But what was it like for you working in that kitchen and working with him in a new city those first couple of years?
Well, I've got to say, like, my initial sort of impression of Canberra after we moved here was it was pretty weird. I worked in, you know, I was working in the city at the time. I was in Sydney. I was like, you know, Circular Quay, finished work at midnight. There's, you know, still, but any night of the week, there's people around, there's things happening. And I remember my first night at Aubergine, basically finished service, and it was like, you know, it's Canberra, so you finish service pretty early. So even if it was like 10 o'clock, you know, I remember going out onto the street and just there was not a person in sight, like no one. And I was just thinking to myself, where am I? Like, oh my God. Very odd. I don't know, Aubergine's often, it's in the suburbs, so it's kind of understandable, but it was like a real kind of shock to be, you know, to go from like Sydney to Canberra. But with Ben, like, man, talk about like, you know, constantly learning, like, you know, going to work for Ben was just like, you know, that was a steep learning curve as well, because he is like, it's kind of like, kind of similar to Phil, I would say. You know, just have someone who's like, has this incredible creativity. And I was like I was caught off guard. I didn't quite know. Like, when I got there, I was like, what is going on here? Like, Ben is just like, you know, I was talking about Rockpool, like, you know, a dish is a dish and this is how we do it. Phil's creating new dishes, like, daily. Like, hey, we're going to try this, and hey, we're going to try this. Like, Ben's changing things in the middle of service? And I was like, well, I've never seen this before. Like, we would get halfway through, like, we'd get through the first sitting, and then it'd be like, all right, we're going to change the garnish up on that one. We're going to move this over here. And I got to admit, I was like, it took me, like, at least 3 or 4 months to really kind of understand how the system worked at Aubergine. And, yeah, and, like, it was hilarious. But and like, and actually, you know, a few people couldn't do it. Like, we had guys come in and they just couldn't handle it. It was, but Ben's like just that creativity was incredible. And it's kind of also like, you know, similar to that sort of, you know, Alex and RJ, just like recreating things. Like, you know, you have a recipe, you have a component. Like, I would bring ideas in of like, hey, why don't we try this? Or what about this that I know how to do? And Ben would be like, yeah, that's great. I'm going to use it this way, which is like completely opposite to what I was thinking. And initially I was like, well, that's not right. That's not what I wanted to do. And then you see the results and you're like, you know, that's actually pretty good. And I guess like Ben was like, for me, it was like he was seeing things that I'd kind of like never really thought about before. Like flavor combinations and things. I was like, that's absurd. And then you try and you're like, no, that works. It actually really works. And I think like for myself, for my own sort of cooking and my abilities. Like, I think it, working with Ben was really like, things sort of really took off for me in terms of how I thought about food and how I thought about dishes and flavors and textures and concepts. That really changed everything. So, and also with Ben, I learned more about like a restaurant as a business because, you know, he was the same sort of thing, small business owner. You sort of learn, I learned so much more just working with Ben for a couple of years than I had the entire time of my career, just because I feel this is a bit of a problem for young guys, young chefs, is that you're never really like exposed to how a restaurant runs as a business. Like, you're taught how a kitchen's run, you're taught, you know, what you're supposed to do and how to cook and how to clean and all that sort of stuff. But no one really delves into like, hey, this is what it's actually like to run, you know, your restaurant as a business and how you're supposed to make money and how you're supposed to, you know, manage staff. And with Ben, that time with Ben, it was just like, I picked up so much.
Well, you ended up becoming business partners with Ben, and Temperado already existed, but you bought into the business. Tell us about how that came about and what you guys did.
Yeah. So look, Ben opened Temperado with Chris, and they ran it together for, I think, 4 years. And I ended up here at Temperado as just the head chef. Like, I finished at Aubergine. Again, it felt like time for a new challenge. And, I just kind of ended up here at Temperado. So I worked here as the head chef with Chris. And like, I have to say, it was like working here just felt like spiritual home. I was like, oh, this is fantastic. You know, there was the wood grill. Again, Chris had that sort of, Chris had worked with Ben for so long. He had that similar kind of creativity where, you know, Chris was, you know, thinking about new dishes and new flavors, but Chris had just such an open, his was so open to new ideas. Like, Chris would, you know, if I had, you know, well, why don't we try this? Chris would be like, yeah, let's go for it and try it, which is really great. And then I left here, and then it just kind of worked out that I'm, you know, managed to buy Chris's share and jumped into Temperado with Ben. And again, that's just like such a fun, you know, couple of years that we were together as business partners here. I mean, it's just, you know, it's kind of like working with a mate kind of thing. It was always, you know, it was just a lot of fun and like a really great sort of like, you know, dipping your toes into business because, you know, I didn't have to do everything. I was still kind of focused in the kitchen. I was, you know, I was primarily thinking about new dishes and, you know, kitchen stuff really. So it was kind of like a really nice introduction to owning a restaurant, which is just before I bought the rest and the story got a lot harder.
Yeah, well, you bought the restaurant at the beginning of 2020, and we all know what happened that year. What was it like sort of buying and having your own restaurant finally? And then the world went upside down.
Yeah, look, that was, I mean, I still say I would have done it. I still am in the camp of like, I wouldn't change a thing. But man, that was like, that was hard. Like, so to end of 2019 was all the bushfires down on the south coast, and, you know, quite close to Canberra as well. And there was basically, I bought at the time where the bushfires were kind of still lingering. And that was a horrible time too for restaurants, because people were staying at home. Like, they didn't want to go out. I literally remember it was like one Friday night, we were standing in the restaurant and it was like this wall of smoke just like ran down the street. And we were like, oh my God, like Armageddon or something. It was the most surreal thing I've ever seen. Just all the smoke just blew in, and then that was kind of it for a few weeks. So that was kind of like, you know, I took it over, and, you know, we had a couple of good, you know, January and then into February, and February's great because it's Valentine's Day and things are just sort of back to normal. And then, you know, March, we sort of, you know, felt like something was about to happen. And then, yeah, everything went to hell. That was very, look, I mean, very challenging. That was just like me with like the 1,000-yard stare for weeks. Because I literally felt like I've finally got a restaurant and now I'm about to lose it straight away and I haven't even had a chance to do anything. Really not really understanding, you know, the full ins and outs of running a business and being very reliant on other people's help. I just remember, like, there were times where I'd just be at the restaurant and I'm just like, what is going to happen? Like, what is going to happen now? Like, how I can't, I had obviously like all my staff, I stood them down. We were trying to do takeaway. It wasn't really working for us. It was a horrible experience. Like, I won't lie. It was horrible. The fact that we've made it through, I mean, like, yeah, a lot of restaurants did make it through with government support, which was, that's the reason why. But what a surreal experience. Like, just like you, I can't, like, it's, looking back at it now, I just can't believe it actually happened. Like, honestly.
Did you change what you do, moving forward as a result of it?
Yeah, it was real. It was definitely a big change because prior to COVID, you know, we were breakfast, lunch and dinner, 5 days a week. We were dinner on Saturday. And I think it's like, yeah, there's been a lot of, I mean, I've made so many changes to this place. I can't even remember half of them. Like, I got rid of like the breakfast that we did here. Cause it just was not really sort of didn't have a huge amount of traction, but, you know, like changing hours. Like first, like most people, we were like set menus only. And then, you know, like everybody else, we've kind of pulled that away as well. Set menu because we had to, because we couldn't have enough. There wasn't enough people allowed in the building. You know, I've been like, you know, changing the days we're open, like lunches were off. Now lunches are back. The lunches were off. Yes. And it's like, really, it's been a constant sort of evolution. But, you know, lockdown 2 also made a big impact on us. I think lockdown 2 really kind of changed the clientele in our sort of neck of the woods, in our little corner of the city, big time. And I think it still has a massive effect because I think now, you know, there are so many people working from home. There's less people in offices, or, you know, we talk to people who are like, oh, I work, you know, one week on, 1 week off. Other people, they say, yeah, we leave the office at midday every day and then go home because that's what we're doing. And yeah, it has really had a huge impact on our part of town, that's for sure. And I think sort of, you know, post-COVID, I mean, I think everybody's still sort of battling in their own way with the sort of the post-COVID, you know, the hangover from that. We sort of like, I looked at what we were doing and I was like, look, you know, we're going to have to, like, you know, generate something else out of this. And that's how we kind of ended up doing catering. We sort of like, look, we have a great kitchen. We have lots of space. We have people, like, let's try and move into another area. So we tried to, like, basically looking for new revenue streams, basically to say we can sort of do other things for other people. Did a little bit of catering in the past, which sort of helped, you know, make it a little bit easier. But yeah, it's, you know, the changes are definitely real, that's for sure, post-COVID. I mean, I look back now, I've said to people before, I said, geez, I wish it was like 2018 again, because that was like, they were great times, you know, amazing times, like when things sort of felt somewhat normal. Now it just still feels kind of different, yeah.
What, do you have any sort of favorite memories of Temperada, like during your time there that you can share?
That's a good question, Huck. I mean, you know, I think you always look back with like rose-colored glasses, right? Like, you know, I think that's sort of like that first period, that 2018 to 2020, when was amazing, like for me, because I was like, you know, I was part owner, but I was, you know, still just really primarily focused on the kitchen. And I've been like sifting through all these old photos we have and looking at the dishes and just thinking, God, that was such a banger. Like we have like so many great things. And, you know, look, they were really great times. Like I've been really blessed to have good staff, you know, the whole way through. And there's, you know, you always sort of look back and think, oh, that was a really great team I had back then. You never really appreciate it in the moment. So that sort of pre-COVID period with everything that's sort of non-COVID related attached to it feels like really amazing. I mean, Ben and I, we did like created a beer with Bridge Road, and that was a lot of fun because we got to like, you know, a couple of trips down to the brewery, which is always good. If little work trips to a brewery is always fun. You know, and creating the beer, that was like a great experience. And I mean, like there's been a lot of triumphs, I feel like, just like small things, you know, and it's, they all kind of melt into each other, I guess. Yeah.
Tell us about when you're closing, and do you have any sort of plans yet for what's going to happen next?
No. So yeah, look, I mean, so we're 18th of May, so 10 years in the books, and like, that's enough. Yeah, and again, that's going to be really kind of sad. That's going to suck. We've had customers bringing us presents in the last week since I announced it, which is like totally unexpected. Like some lady baked us like shortbread and brought it in and said, "Oh, there's something for you guys to say thanks." And it's like, you don't realize you're like touching people like this. Like, I think, yeah, I mean, it was amazing, right? For me personally, no, I don't have any plans at the moment. I think I'm really sort of focused on the next, you know, 11 or so weeks while we're trying to make the most out of this, trying to have a bit of fun and, you know, put together some more good memories for people. I mean, you know, trying to get all of our regulars back at least once and hopefully do a couple more events before we close. But yeah, I think probably the big thing you don't really appreciate, just what I was just saying, is like, you don't realize like you're making an impact on people's lives. You don't realize that you're like, you know, special occasions, special moments. You work in a restaurant and it's like, oh, what are you doing? You're like scrubbing oysters, you're polishing cutlery or something. Everything's seems very menial, but you don't sort of, you know, taking a step back and seeing, look, you know what, these guys are, it's their anniversary, you know, and they're celebrating something special for them. And so, you know, the obligation on us is to make it as special as we can. And yeah, you kind of see that now with a bit of an outpouring of emotions, which is really nice, very touching. Yeah.
Well, you've given so many Canberrans, you know, memories for a lifetime and been part of the new wave of food in this city. It's been an absolute honor to have you on Deep in the Weeds, and can't wait to see what you do next, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to be a holiday first, so that's definitely on the cards initially. After that, we'll see. thanks for having me on there, Huck. Amazing. It's good to finally be on.
Yeah. Keep in touch and we'll talk again soon.
No worries. Cheers. Thanks, Huck.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.